So I think that that's tough, right? Because I think we're exhausted. So our brains aren't really conditioned to think that way. We don't really have those patterns that support that kind of autopilot decision making towards the relationship with self. But I think part of being able to achieve, you know, big things in your life requires that you, that you're in a state of self-actualization and reaching your highest potential because your needs are met.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think what you're talking about and what I noted the whole time you were speaking is that you were talking about all of these intrinsic needs.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I work with entrepreneurs and go-getters to optimize the health and performance of these world-changing innovators, people kind of like you. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. Today, I sat down with Susan Hobson. Susan is a high-performance coach working with elite business leaders, entrepreneurs, and athletes. As you will soon hear, she has a remarkable ability to tap into the brain and leverage it to our advantage. This interview was full of actionable strategies to help you recognize patterns that are no longer serving your mission and immediate steps to help you achieve your true potential. The cool thing about Susan is no one can escape her incredible capacity to observe your state. If you are bought in and you're ready to go to the next level, she'll call you on it and take you there. And conversely, if you've been hiding in your own head and making things up as to why you can't move forward, she's going to find that for you as well. This is an incredibly actionable interview. You're absolutely going to love it. Susan Hobson, I am so excited to finally have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Woohoo! Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here. As so, you know,
I do know you are so high energy and you have so much to offer. I feel like it's just oozing out of you at all times. And listen, I mean this in the best possible way. You don't stop, right? You have this radar for assessing and engaging and inspiring people that's truly magical. And you'll know people for 30 seconds and I'll go into the washroom. I'll come back out and they're like deep into their life story. They've like quit their jobs. They've switched. How do you read people like this? Is this who you are and you've just been good at this? Or is this learned? How do you do that?
To be honest with you, I think it's mostly instinct by now. I think it comes from my time as an athlete. For those of you in your audience who don't know, I'm an ex-professional women's hockey player. And so a lot of athletics is state, right? Is reading into people's state. I mean, your opponent, you got to be able to read and respond to what's going on with their nonverbal cues in order to get the beat on them and get to the net. But also with your teammates. It's not like you can talk your way through all of those different systems in play. Sometimes it's just a look, right? Or it's a shoulder fake or it's whatever it is. So I think a lot of it is instinct that's been honed and trained and conditioned in my brain over the years. But yes, definitely as a coach, I have to be totally calibrating people's state even when I'm not paying attention to it. So I think what I've done a really good job of as a coach, and this again comes from my NLP background, which I know we're going to get into a little bit deeper in a sec. But NLP, we talk a lot about the power of state. State really is the thing that drives results in everything that you do. So as a coach, I think that I've really disciplined myself to calibrate people's state automatically so that I know like first and foremost, when I jump in the chair and I get working with a client, like my clients, they're high achievers, they're go-getters, they're busy. They don't have a lot of time, right? So they want to just get right to the meat quickly. So I had to be able to calibrate their state right away and say, and see if they're ready to go or if I got to do a little work, you know, if I got to clear something or I got to manage something or help them manage something so that we can actually get into a better state where we can actually go deep and we can get great work done. So yeah, I guess you see it, right? Because our kids go to school and together and we hang out socially together. But yeah, I don't even notice, to be honest with you. It's so instinctual for me at this point in my life that I don't even notice I'm doing it. I think it's great though. I love my ability.
I know it's like your secret power. So you're an entrepreneur, and I always say to people, you're a perspective coach, and you're a perspective coach to achievers from around the world. How did you get to this place? And what drove you to do the work that you're doing?
Oh, yeah, I love this question. Honestly, I can't imagine doing anything else in the world. I just think that I was a born coach for so many different reasons. First and foremost, being a high performance coach, I think I specifically got onto this path because I have a background in high performance, right? Like I competed in some of the most competitive environments in the world. And because of that fact, I really understand what it means and what it takes, right, to be a high performer and a high achiever. And so, yeah, I always say that my clients are me to a large extent. I've really built a business based on coaching myself, which I'll talk more about the strategy behind that in a second. But I think my clients really, you know, respect me because of that, because they know that I've lived that and I've breathed that and I've come from that same background that they're coming from. But the way I started on this journey was basically, I experienced exactly what it is that my clients are experiencing when they come through the door to see me for the first time, which is that it's all well and good for a high achiever, high performer until it's not. Right. And that's sort of that moment where they hit the brick wall. I know you see this in your practice too, working with high performers. They hit the brick wall, their health is falling apart, right? They're overworking themselves, so their relationships are suffering. There's some kind of adversity that they're experiencing in their life that starts to make the other things that have always worked so well fall apart. Right. And so I had this experience, believe it or not, myself. I played hockey at Princeton, at the number one school on the planet. And it was all well and good when I was getting recruited to go there. And I was one of the top hockey recruits in the country. I had tons of confidence, obviously, going in, riding that high into my freshman year. But what do you think happened when I got there? I got to the most competitive environment academically and athletically. I crashed and I burned just like my clients. So my whole like coaching process and everything that I've developed over the last decade of doing this with high performers is based on that experience. When I hit the brick wall, you know, luckily for me, people, places like Princeton, they got a lot of resources for coaches like me on staff. So I was able to get paired up with somebody who taught me all about what it is that I teach today. And the results, I mean, it really was the moment where I decided to do this, you know, for a living and that this was going to be my path, spoke for themselves. I went from bench rider of the century my first year, totally crashing and burning with my confidence and motivation, to being on the starting lineup, being one of the leading scorers my second year, like literally almost failing out of my classes my first year, to being on the national dean's list my second. So the second I had that experience, Meg, I was like, this is it, man. This is what successful people know that average people just don't get exposed to. Unfortunately. So when I had that experience, I knew I just wanted to know everything I could about high performance psychology and brain training and everything that I teach today. So,
and I've had a few people in my office this week and they're like, I really want to get well. Great. But they're not motivated, right? They're just like, they're flatlined. They self-sabotage. They don't do anything. How do we get people from that state of like, I think I want it. And I think for a lot of these people, it's an intellectual exercise to like, yeah, feeling it so that they become this high achiever, this high performer. Because we talk about high performers and you and I both work with them. But what if people are like, it'd be cool to be that person, but I don't know how to get to that zone where I could even achieve that.
I think people need to recognize what it actually takes to make change happen in your life, in your business, right? You have to really understand what it is that you're up against, is the coaching that I give people, right? Which is the brain, okay? The brain runs the show. The brain runs the show. 95 to 97% of your choices every single day are autopilot, automatic. Okay, so that's what you're up against, right? You're up against all of that hardwiring and all of that conditioning that, let's face it, by the age of 25 is pretty like well set and pretty deeply seated. So when people come through the door and they're saying, oh yeah, it would be great if I was healthier, or I wish I was healthier. It's just not enough, right? There's a difference between what I call the dabbler, who like dips their toe in the pool of change.
Ugh, dabblers, yes.
And the professional, right? Who's like rolls up their sleeve and they come to experts like us because they know that we're able to get results, but they come knowing what that requires of them,
yeah,
right? So they have some level of that commitment already inside them. Now it's our job, right, as their coaches, as their change agents, to give them the tools to be able to flesh that out and to be able to really harness that, understand it, and then obviously use that to be able to sustain change over the long run. Really, when it comes down to motivation, I don't care how you slice the cake, the professional understands that you really got to activate that why factor. You can't be all vague and surface level about the change that you want if you're really trying to impact that like really deeply seated stuff,
yep,
that's creating all of that self-sabotaging pattern of behavior in the first place, the thing that's like creating this level of result that you're stuck on. You really have to understand that that result is coming from a pattern. The brain runs on patterns. Patterns are predictable, right? So if you really want to sustain change over the long run and get to some new level of your performance, whether it's your health or whatever else, your money or your career, your business or whatever, is you really have to understand what's at play in the brain, which is when it comes to motivation, it's quite simple. The brain, it migrates away from pain and towards pleasure. That's how it does its job, keeping us safe and alive, right?
Right.
It's hardwired and conditioned to do that. So if you're currently not motivated to do the things that you need to do, guess what needs to change? Your associations of pain and pleasure.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So one of the things and one of the tricks there, Meg, and I know you know this because you're so fabulous at doing this with your clients as well, is just really activating that why factor, just getting them to connect with what's really meaningful about that change to them, getting them to connect with the emotion behind that, right? Whether it's the pain of what this is actually costing them, right? This level of living and this level of health and what this is actually costing them, or it's the pleasure of what it actually means to have high performance health.
Yeah, right. And it's interesting that you make that association between pain and pleasure and stimulation. And I'm curious your thoughts on this, because I find in my practice that I ask people what motivates them and I ask them what their why is. And, you know, people come in, they're like, I want to lose 20 pounds. I'm great. Well, why do you want to do that? Well, I want to fit into these jeans. Or when we get caught where your motivators are external, mm-hmm, I feel like it's a red flag for me in that initial intake that this is going to take twice as much work for us to get your results, as people are like, I'm on a mission. Like, I have stuff I want to do in this world, and this weight is holding me back. How do you get people to go from understanding that their motivation is external to really flipping on that internal motivation?
Well, I do a lot of work with this, right? Because I feel like when you come through the door crashing and burning and asking for help from somebody like you or myself, it's the same thing I experienced that I said that birthed my coaching practice, which is those patterns, you know, those motivational patterns that are extrinsically based, I call that extrinsic motivation, those are all well and fine and good until they're not. When it's extrinsic, it's not in your control. And yeah, there's nothing sustainable about a pattern that's based on something you can't control, because guess what? It's all good when it's there, but when it's not, you're SOL.
Yeah,
right?
You fall apart.
And that's what I think really resonates with my crowd, is that they obviously high achievers, perfectionists, you know, A-type personalities. Like, the second I start to coach in that frame where it's about control, it's like giving them more control when they make it intrinsic. When they make their patterns for success intrinsic, it gives them more control, because guess what? Like, when it's in your control, that's a switch you can flick on and off whenever you need to, right? Which can put you into a state of high performance, which means that you can now have greater influence over the results you crave. So when I put it into that term, they're like, they want the intrinsic. They're like, give me that coaching. Let's go deeper. Let's find out what that is inside. Because at the end of the day, those patterns are sustainable because you can always, always activate them in your own experience.
You can always go there.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think it you and
it's beauty.
Yeah, well, and you and I were just like, well, of course you would want to go and find those internal areas of motivation.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people, I mean, I have some people in my practice, you know, they're in their 60s and they're not making as much money as they used to, or things change, or their kids move out and they fall apart. And it's always been those external things that made them happy. And if this is a red flag to anyone, it's like, you got what inside of you makes you happy and drives you? Like, drop the external, right? Those are the bonus, but you can't depend on them. I want to talk about something that I've seen, and I want your perspective on this. And I'm not trying to open a can of worms for listeners here, but I keep seeing these articles online, and they're titled something like, why am I okay with my mediocre life? Why it's okay to be normal? And I'm saying all of this without like getting into the depth of, you know, there's the title and then there's what the article is really about. But I'm talking about the headline here.
Mm-hmm.
What's the balance from your perspective between entrenching ourselves in gratitude for what we have? You know, I'm okay with what I have and what we've built. And then really, like, what is the mental state that takes you from like, gratitude's important, but I don't want gratitude to hold people back, right? How do we, what's the balance between mediocrity and ambition?
Yeah, I think that I coach a lot on this concept. So I'm happy that you asked about it. I think gratitude is a starting point for my day. You know what I mean? Like if I wake up and I'm attitude of gratitude, it's my spiritual vitamin on my nightstand. I pop that, right? I'm like good to go because my cup runneth over. Before my foot hits the floor, one of my strategies for success is that if I'm already in an abundant state, life is now just a party. Like let's go celebrate. You know, I got everything that I need. I'm feeling great about it. But like it doesn't stop there. Right? It's like you've got all of this, like go use it to your highest good.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I think the problem with that, and I see this a lot, right? And I totally get it. You know, I'm a working mom. I got a business. I'm trying to balance all the balls and the spinning plates or whatever the metaphor is. But I think we're exhausted. And I think that that's how we get caught into these ruts of just trying to sustain the status quo. Because, you know, like we're doing so much. We're go, 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 just trying to keep our head above water, right? Because of all of the different responsibilities that we have. And a lot of times that's where we can get trapped into being the human doing rather than the human being. You know, the human doing is just trying to check everything off the list to feel like it's enough at the end of the day. And then, you know, I always coach on this. Okay, great. So you feel like you've done enough at the end of the day. Ah, your head hits the pillow. You wake up. Guess what? You got to do it all over again in order to feel good about yourself, right? So I think what in working with really like successful people and that, again, that high performance psychology that's sort of maybe different a little bit from that status quo psychology is just they understand that they're human beings. And what I mean by that is it's a different strategy, right? Human beings understand that we have needs. We're not robots. we're not machines on the conveyor line, you know, at the factory. It's like, no, part of our strategy for achieving, you know, the high quality of life experience, I call it, that 10 out of 10 health, wealth, self, business relationships, is that you understand in order to get to that state of self-actualization, if I can refer to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, you can't just stay in the basement of safety and security, you know, which is a lot of times the human doing is just trying to get it all done so that they can keep their head above water so that they can keep the status quo because that makes them feel safe, right?
Right.
That makes them feel secure. But it kind of precludes you from being able to meet any of those higher level needs, right? Which human beings, we understand, help us to self-actualize. So I think, you know, a lot of that high-performance psychology is just understanding that to really be able to achieve amazingly fulfilling things. Now, again, my definition of success might be different than a lot of people out there. My definition of success is just, do I feel the way I want to feel living my life, the life I've architected? You know, my foot hits the floor, I feel this about my day. I go to, you know, work, I'm interacting with my clients, I feel this. I'm with my daughter, we're having this experience, we're playing in the park, we're doing arts, I feel this, right? So I think part of my strategy in getting to that is that, yeah, when my needs are met, in other words, like I'm taking good care of myself, right? I'm meeting the needs for self-confidence and self-expression and self-acceptance and just having a really healthy relationship with myself where I make sure my needs are good. It helps me to be able to do better work as a mom, as a coach, as a, you know, all the different things that I'm saying that I care about that I'm trying to architect success in. So I think that that's tough, right? Because I think we're exhausted. So our brains aren't really conditioned to think that way. We only have those patterns that support that kind of autopilot decision making towards the relationship with self. But I think part of being able to achieve, you know, big things in your life requires that you, that you're in a state of self-actualization and reaching your highest potential because your needs are met.
Yeah. And you know, I think what you're talking about and what I noted the whole time you were speaking is that you were talking about all of these intrinsic needs. And I think when people are referring to, I'm okay with my mediocre life, I'm okay with the size of my house, I'm okay with the car that I drive, they're focused on that external space right? It's a totally different conversation when we're moving inside. And I cringe at the thought of my internal environment resting on mediocrity. I could care less about the outside part, but like that inside part. And I think you spoke to that so clearly. You're a successful woman. You're raising a young daughter. What language or techniques do you use with her to open her perspective towards her unlimited potential?
Oh, I get this question all the time. Everybody's like, wow, Brooklyn, she must be so set. Hey, she's got the 24/7 coaching going on.
Attitude of gratitude, 24 hours a day.
Honestly, no, I just, and obviously it's not like that. We're just doing our thing, right? Like having our experiences, being mindful, being present, being connected. But obviously I want the best for her. And that means that I bring out my coaching tools where I feel like they're going to benefit her the most. And I think a lot of what I do with language just specifically is just trying to like edit, just trying to catch words that she uses, you know, like, your daughter's the same age as mine. So it's a lot of figuring out what they can and can't do.
Right.
And you're starting to see that limiting language of I can't do it and getting frustrated and wanting to give up on things. Right. So just a simple edit, like, you know, if I catch her saying I can't, I'll just say, you know, suggest that she say that it's challenging instead of, you know, I can't do this right now. Okay, well, it's tough right now and it's challenging, right? But we're developing a new skill in that challenge. So let's just keep at it and see what happens. And then when she pushes through and she sees that she's able to push through the challenge and then she has some sort of result that she's happy with, like I'm thinking about a couple of days ago, we were trying to build a Lego thing. Just we lost the instructions, so we were trying to do it from the cover of the box, just by looking at it, right? So, but we did it. We did it. It was like total role modeling as a strategy. She was able to like see me, and we were able to see the box. So then, what I'll do is I'll just anchor that, and I'll talk about it, right? I'll say, oh my gosh, see, if we hadn't pushed through, we never would have this beautiful castle. And I'll just really, really, really ask her about, you know, how that feels. And it's, you know, trying to really anchor that positive association, right? That pleasure leverage to be able to make sure that she has that as a touch point in her brain the next time she wants to give up or the next time she wants. And it also will show up. Like I notice that her language does start to change as I start to influence her and expose her to that sort of a thing. So yeah, little examples like that. I do, you know, a ton of visualization with her. Like right before bed, I love to ask her about what she wants to be when she grows up. And this week, I think she said she wants to be, this must be because what's going on in the class right now, because they're doing all kinds of like choreographed dances together. Yeah. And like this week, she wants to be a singer and a dancer. So I just play that out with her, right? I play that tape for her and I say, what does that look like? Or can you see yourself on a stage? And oh my God, I can hear it. I'm in the audience. You sound fabulous. But what does that feel like, Brooklyn? Like, and then, you know, trying to get her to the feeling is the thing that's going to create that as a touch point again for her. It's going to create it as a possibility for her. If she can see herself doing it, feel herself doing it, all of a sudden her brain knows that it's possible.
Right.
Obviously I try to use my tools where that's concerned, but that's also just fun, right? Like to sit and actually imagine, like what adults, we don't really do that, right? So I have a 5-year-old, it gives me an excuse to do that at night.
Well, we don't play, right? We just like flat out don't play. And I ask all my patients, what do you do for fun or play? And they look at me like I'm crazy. But we need to make the time to do that. The technique that you use is called NLP. What does that stand for? And how does it work?
Yeah, NLP is fabulous. Honestly, I discovered this after Princeton when I was getting into my post-grad work with trying to find, you know, different coaching practices and tools and whatnot. And I was really looking for a tool that was going to help my clients get results fast. You know, again, that's my audience, right? It's like the athlete's about to go on the ice or about to go on the field, and they just need to get into the right mindset. So what is that tool that's going to help them get into that peak performance state, that's going to help them have that peak performance experience? It's the same thing for my clients in the boardroom. They're about to give a big presentation, or, you know, my entrepreneur is about to make a big pitch and try to make the sale, right? Or even just like, ugh, I love NLP as a mom. Like I just gave you lots of different examples of. I use this every single day as a mom too. And so yeah, NLP is basically the art and science of influence. It's a really simple way to describe it. So like I said, the brain runs the show. Brain runs on patterns, right? The patterns in your brain, the 95% of autopilot decisions are the things creating your results, your level of health, your quality of relationships, right? Your the amount of money you make. All of those results are running on patterns, are being driven by patterns in your brain. So NLP really teaches you how to build patterns for predictable results, you know? So patterns for success, sustainable patterns for success. So whether it's influencing yourself or it's influencing your world or the people in it, it's just basically giving you the strategies and giving you the tools that that train your brain on how to do that.
And so do you have like a quick tip, like a quick exercise that people can kind of have in their back pockets? And, you know, I could think of like 8 ways of phrasing this question, but in essence, it's like, it's those people who feel like they've kind of plateaued, or they're like, I just can't get back in my zone where I was disciplined around the achievement. What's a quick like thing that they can do to get back into that state where they're feeling where they want to go?
Yeah, I think that the quickest way to do that is just an exercise called I Can Because I Did, right? Just going back to what I taught us already about the brain. The brain's meant to keep us safe and alive. That's its job in the body. It takes that job pretty seriously. It doesn't really allow you to progress unless it predicts that that's going to be safe. It's going to be pleasure, right? It's going to be something good. So the way that the brain predicts success over failure is that it has to go back into our memory bank and look for proof, right? It has to say, okay, I'm about to do this thing. How's this going to go? And in that prediction, it goes and it scans, you know, the past and your past self memories, and it looks for proof. Do I know how to do this? The last time I did this, how did that go? Was that painful or was that pleasurable? Did I ace it, rock it, or did I fall on my ass and embarrass myself? So one of the tools that I just love, and it's one of my power tools for this, for confidence, for being able to progress towards something that's important to you, is called the highlight reel. So what I do is I just help my clients really develop a really solid, like, you know, same thing as SportsCenter at night, where you see these little clips of them at their best in their peak state of performance, right? I get them to like create, you know, 30-second clips of them in really, really resourceful memories. So, you know, times where they were at their A game state, times when they were able to overcome adversity, times when they were able to like recover really quickly, times where they were able to break through barriers and roadblocks, and trying to reconnect with those sorts of memories helps them to reconnect with those resources in their brain, because they're still the same person. So mm-hmm. If they did it then, their brain can make a case for how they could do it now. But it also, it activates that state of confidence, which is, it gives them access to everything that they need in their brain to be able to actually get into a state of execution with the result they want.
I like that. And framing this from the perspective, not of necessarily blockages, but are there things, I think awareness is so key for people to be able to move forward. Are there patterns or roadblocks that you see people frequently falling into on their road to success?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of different patterns. I think one of the biggest ones is that people get into this expectation of perfection. I have a lot of high achievers, A types, right? Like they sometimes build their patterns for success based on their desire for perfection. And like I said, sometimes that can work, right? It can get us to a really, you know, high level performance in our career if we're really doing, you know, getting great grades and then getting, you know, the great job and then all that stuff can be great. But again, that's a roadblock because it's an external pattern, right? It's an extrinsic form of motivation. So what happens when all of a sudden they try to get to the next level and it's hard, right? And they hit that adversity or they're running into those deeper roadblocks that the brain is going to really resist seeing or resist changing. Then all of a sudden they're not getting the perfect result. Guess what happens, right? All of a sudden their confidence tanks. And when their confidence tanks, then their motivation dwindles, right? So a lot of times when people, they come through the door, they're super jazzed, they're connected with their Y factor, they're connected with their pain leverage because they're having some kind of like a brick wall moment, right? Mm-hmm. But then, but then we get into the process and we start to get into the deeper work. All of a sudden, then their brain can get triggered to see those roadblocks as being things that they're not succeeding at overcoming. So that can trigger all of a sudden a sense of failure. And once they get into a sense of failure, their brain kind of closes up shop. Brain doesn't like to feel like a failure. Failure's pain, right? What do we say the brain does when it experiences pain? Boom, it runs in the opposite direction, right? So it'll start to throw up, you know, self-sabotaging behaviors, stop showing up for the appointments. I know you and I have talked about this before, right? Start making excuses as to why the change isn't possible or why maybe this level of change is good enough. The brain's quite tricky, believe it or not, which is why you need somebody outside yourself, like a coach or like, you know, an ND to be able to hold you in that space and keep you accountable, because the brain's quite tricky and it'll try to create those stories, right? So the reframe there and the tool that I give them is it's progression, not perfection. Like there's no such thing as perfection first and foremost, but it's a terrible strategy because it's one you can't control. High achievers and high performers who sustain that over a long time, they really understand that, you know, the measure of success really needs to be progression. So every single day when I get up and I try my best, you know, as long as I'm learning something, I'm growing, you know. So in other words, even the perceived failure is not really failure. It's feedback. It's feedback, not failure, is what I teach. So if they can sort of get into that sort of a growth mindset where they see progression as a measure of success, then guess what? They can always progress. Even when they fall on their face, if they say, oh, interesting, how'd that happen? What can I learn from that? You know, and then thus, what do I need to work on so I can overcome that the next time? Then all of a sudden, that's going to guarantee no matter what that they're going to grow and they're going to progress towards their goal. Right? So that is a strategy that's in their control. That is something that if they're always feeling successful because they're always progressing is going to put them into a state of confidence. Yeah. Can I progress today? I can. Great. Brain's like, boom, here you go. Here's what you need. Go after it. So yeah, I think that that's probably one of the biggest things that I see as a change agent, right? Is just that terrible strategy of seeking perfection.
Yeah. Perfection. People are sick when they are perfectionists. They come into my office unwell because they can't sustain it. And you know, they can't sustain it mentally, but we see it all the time that they can't sustain it physically. And I use this analogy with them that you have this train and it's just pulled you into the station. But that's where the train stops. And so now you have to get off and you have this opportunity to jump on all of these new different trains to take you to a new place. Otherwise you have to go back from where you came from. Right?
Yeah.
Perfection, if you've got the aptitude for it, is really a great strategy for grade six. It's just really hard. Right, yeah. Right. It's really hard to be impactful in the world. And, you know, the other thing that I think that perfectionism does, and like jump in on this, is that when we as parents or as leaders are caught up in perfectionism, then what it does to the people around us is it says the only standard for you is perfectionism as well. And two things happen to those leaders. They're either like, oh, no, I don't hold my staff to that level, which is kind of arrogant.
And incongruent, by the way.
Totally incongruent, right? Or it makes their staff is just like they're overworked and they're unhealthy. So we're perpetuating this really unhealthy unhealthy behavior. And sometimes that's what it takes, right? It's like saying to people, this is leadership issue. Like we gotta drop this perfection. Because it's interfering with your ability to be a leader. We have to create pain for them.
It goes right back to what we talked about why people are just trying to keep their head above water. It's because our society has conditioned us to believe that that's what's important, right? Like this is our hardwiring in our brain. It always goes towards what we value, what's important. And we value you know, go, 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 do, 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 trying to be perfect and trying to look perfect or trying to do the task perfectly, because that's what society perpetuates. So we have to take responsibility for that, right? As parents, as business leaders, right? As people who are leading in the community, it's like, no, we have to role model what it looks like to be, you know, valuing a state of progression rather than the state of perfection, because ultimately, that's what's going to help all of us be better versions of ourselves. And that's what's going to be better for our community, our country, our world, right? It's the ripple effect of all of that. And it's leadership. You're absolutely right. Role modeling.
And you alluded to this, earlier, but I want to get your sense of this. How would you define health?
Ooh, I love this question. And this is sort of how I operate, right? When clients come through my door, I'm a big believer in helping them gain clarity. Clarity is power. If you don't know what the heck it is, that is that 10 out of 10 goal, right? How the heck is your brain going to start planning how to get there, right? Planning its route on how to get there. So the way that I teach goal setting and goal getting in a neuro-linguistic programming kind of way is just, again, it's based on understanding how the brain is hardwired to make autopilot decisions, right? So it's not what we want that's important when we're setting goals. It's how we want to feel. You want to hijack the brain and inject the brain with fuel that's going to sustain you over a long period of trying to, you know, overcome all the obstacles and roadblocks to get to your goal. You got to make sure that you're getting all the way to that why factor, like we said. So for me, health is all about how I want to feel. Like I said, if I wake up and I feel excited about my day, motivated about the day that I've set up for myself, because again, I've architected how I spend my time, energy, and focus, and how I invest my valuable resources. If I'm like looking forward to that, that's a good state of health for me mentally. If my foot hits the floor and I feel energized, right, and I feel vital and I feel like clear cognitively, like that's a state of health for me too. And it's just also about like how I've architected my day and how I feel living it. So do I feel like I'm too far to the left or too far to the right, or do I feel like I'm pretty like balanced in all the areas that really matter to me most? Because when I feel that way, I'm able to be very present and connected in my experiences, which makes me feel very calm, right? Which is an awesome, I know you talk about mindfulness all the time with your clients, is an awesome state, not only for performance, but for your health, right? So yeah. And then at the, you know, when I'm eating my foods, do I feel fueled? When I'm doing my exercise, do I feel strong? Right? When I'm with my relationships, are they healthy? Or am I connected? So health, it really just permeates all throughout the different areas of my life. And I measure that based on how I want to feel, because that creates little benchmarks for me throughout the day, right? So I can see at the end of the day, when I'm getting my processing tool, my 5-minute journal at the end of the day, I can say, man, I really didn't feel good there. Like, what the heck is going on? And then I can get intentional about my health goals for the next day.
It's a great benchmark, because you either feel good or you don't, right? And yeah. It's the reason why people look at their bank account and they're like, I still feel shitty, because yeah. it's that external piece. I love that. And it's something you can tap into, like we talked about, at any given moment. How do you feel?
Can't feel good about your bank account unless you're in a good state of health.
Yeah, exactly, right? Absolutely, absolutely. Each month, I'm featuring a new Anthropology quiz to help you unlock and uncover some of the physical performance blocks that may be holding you back from your true potential. This month, we're focusing on digestion. Why? Because it is the center of everything that happens with respect to your health. It's also something that we rarely like to talk about with our friends or colleagues. So we thought we'd put it in a quiz for you so you can have an understanding as to whether or not your bowel movements, digestion, and the way you are feeling are common or normal or amazing. To learn more or to take the quiz, head on over to meganwalker.com/anthropology quiz. What we're going to do is we're going to move into the second part of the interview. And these are rapid fire questions. You did not have access to them beforehand. I call them key performance indicators. So just like we would have with a startup, we have key metrics that we want to look at. I think there's key metrics with respect to people's health and key things that people are doing. And I love to have some insight into that. So the first question for you is, do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share it?
Yes, absolutely. I'm a big believer in routines. They help my world go round and round and round and round. I always say that the way you start your day is a huge predictor of how that day will go. I think obviously I've said a lot about state. So if I spend, you know, even just 5 minutes in my mental gym in the morning, then I know I'm going to, you know, get my brain into a really high performance state. And that's just going to domino effect throughout the rest of my day. So yeah, spiritual vitamin, I pop it and it's on my bedstand. It's the attitude of gratitude. You know, I just play the thank you game. I say thank you for five things. A lot of the times I try to make that intrinsic. That's the extra step. That's the advanced version, right? Which is just I'm thankful for things that are going on inside of me, not necessarily things outside of me in my life. So then I'll sort of, you know, make sure I get into a little bit of a conscious connection, which to me is just really, again, speaking towards the importance of that relationship with self. I'm a human being. I got to remember that, right? If I'm going to start my day off as a human being, making sure I'm protecting and meeting my needs, then I got to make sure I'm consciously connecting with me. And what that means, most people don't realize this, but you're actually in a relationship with yourself. It's probably the most important relationship that you'll ever experience. So, I always say, if you don't call your best friend up and say, "Hey girl, what's up? How you feeling? What's going on? How you doing?" What kind of a connection are you going to have? What kind of a relationship are you going to have? Is that going to be a high quality relationship if you don't even take time to communicate with that person? So conscious connection for me is just a form of communicating with myself. And that can be through meditation, right? It can just be through, you know, a check-in. Just depends on how much time I have for myself. And that usually gets me into a pretty, pretty awesome state, but it also just hooks me up to make sure that I'm making autopilot decisions towards that person that I'm taking care of. Right? Like me throughout the rest of my day. And then I'll just sprinkle in a little bit of intention. So just, you know, just giving my brain some directionality of thinking and choosing and behaving for the day. So again, as a high achiever, I think I wake up worthy. I wake up in a state of, you know, abundance. I wake up feeling pretty damn good. And life at that point is just kind of a celebration. So I want to make sure that I'm being intentional about what I want to do with all of that abundance and what I want to do with all of that feeling great. So I'll push that into intentions with my daughter, intentions with my business and my work as a coach, and then maybe just intentions with myself, right? My health, my workouts, whatever it is that I'm working on.
I love it. Fiction or nonfiction, what are you reading right now?
Oh, man, I am such a dork.
And Meg,
you've been in my house. You know, I don't even own a TV. When you come in my house, it's just a big library of self-help personal development books, right? So I have a big habit of going back and just kind of skimming and pulling books and just, you know, reconnecting with some of my godfathers of personal development or my godmothers of personal development. So I'm a big Tony Robbins fan. Obviously, he's an NLP guy. I know we share this in common. He's a big NLP guy. He's a performance coach like me. So yeah, I like to go back and I like to connect with his stuff because I just find that it's stuff that I use in my coaching practice and it's stuff that helps me to add to my repertoire. I'm probably reading. I think I've got Tony on my bedstand right now.
I love it. You're speaking my language. Hot beverage of choice. What is it and how do you prepare it?
This would be what I'm drinking right now, my Brooklyn mug. Green tea, and then sometimes green tea with maca.
Nice.
So I know that you and I have talked about, you know, the power of that, but I'm totally off of coffee. I gave up coffee for Lent. I feel amazing. I don't think I'm lacking in energy, do you?
I was going to say something. No, I wasn't.
It's been a new leaf for me because, I think, you know, for those of us out there who are go, go, go and trying to, you know, self-actualize and do a lot, sometimes you can reach for the coffee. But for me, the green tea is what's been in my mug for the last like 2 months. And it's been great. I love it. Very sustainable energy, I find.
Yeah, without making you all wired. What do you do? And not you, but everyone. What do you do for fun or play?
Yeah, and what's funny when you were saying that, like, we all got to have more fun and play more. And I do, like, this is definitely a box that is checked for me. Like, I'm a big kid at heart. You know, anybody who knows me, I'm kind of in that childlike state a lot. I actually use it strategically, not only in my coaching, but also with my daughter. Like I said, we don't have a TV, so we're constantly playing. Like, I think for those of you who follow my Mom Mondays, you see I'm big into building forts with her, just impromptu forts in the living room, right? Or in our bedrooms, or yeah, we just love to do the Lego, or I'll paint with her, or we get outside. We do tons of outside activities. Like, I'm a big athlete. We love, she is too. She loves sports. So yeah, what do I do for fun? I just get down in the sand with my kid and I play.
Amazing. Entrepreneurism. Are we born this way, or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Ooh, I actually think that I'll speak for myself. I think I'm a born entrepreneur. My father was an entrepreneur. I was lucky to have that as a role model. So I think it was probably in my DNA, but it was also conditioned in my brain from a young age. But yeah, I'd say that it's, yeah, I think that it can be trained. I think there's a skill set there, right, that can be trained in a person's brain if they're open for it. I say the biggest predictor of whether or not you're an entrepreneur is just that you're able to take risk. If you're not able to take risk, if you got too much fear, you're not willing to get past the fear, you're never going to make it as an entrepreneur, because every day as an entrepreneur, you kind of wake up having to take risk. Every day is a risk when you're an entrepreneur. You don't have that safety net. Your safety net is you, right? So, yeah, I think that there is a skill set definitely that can be trained there. But I think I'll speak for myself. I think it was a born one. I think it was in me from the get-go.
Yeah, I see it in you all the time. Your brain is just, you're ideating. You're always dreaming up new pieces and evolutions of your already incredibly successful business. Susan, this is what is, it was amazing. It was practical. It was relatable. It was the kind of thing that we can actually just pick up and use right away, which is what I know people are looking for. I also know people are going to want to find you, and they're going to want to hear more about your ideas. Where can they learn more about what you're up to?
Yeah, so as always, my home is elitehighperformance.com. So I encourage all of you after this to just go over there and check it out. I deliver weekly videos called Motivational Monday videos, where it's just a quick hit of what it is you need to hear, some power coaching, like literally like your client in the chair getting like the latest and greatest tips or tricks or strategies for high performance. You can opt in to our newsletter there, which is going to give you access to that every Monday morning. We're going to shoot that over to you so that you start your week off, like I said, on the right note. Big predictor of how that week is going to go. And other than that, I'm on Facebook, Susan L. Hobson. I'd love for you to add me as a friend there. Check me out. I'm always delivering opportunities to take webinars and daily motivational quotes. And as well, like, you follow along with my motivational channel on YouTube. You can catch me there, Coach Susan Hobson. I'd love it if you followed my channel and you tuned in that way as well. And then on LinkedIn, just under Susan Hobson as well. It's another channel that you can connect with all of my inspirational ideas each week.
Yeah, and well worth checking out. We're going to have all of those links available in the show notes so people can absolutely find you. And I really recommend you guys sign up for this newsletter. Susan's videos every Monday are fantastic. I realize I have multiple email addresses and I get you on every single one. So I don't miss you. Susan, it was a pleasure to have you, like always. Thanks so much for taking the time to be with all of us.
Absolutely. And Meg, you know what I love to do? This is my little extra gift for everybody who's spent the time investing in themselves. You can always tell a lot about what somebody values according to how they invest their time and their focus, especially when it's, you know, towards their own personal development and growth. So I'm a big believer in supporting more of that, because like I said, there's a domino effect. So the more we work, you know, invest in ourselves, the more we grow ourselves, the better we're going to be to our community, to our country, to our world, to our kids, right? There's definitely a ripple effect of all of that. So as a reward, because again, you got to incentivize and reward the brain, I'd like to throw out a little bit of a gift to your audience. So anybody who emails me, susan@elitehighperformance.com, after this interview, I'm going to offer you 50% off of your deep dive assessment. Now, this assessment is killer, you guys. It's an opportunity to get all the way to the root of your most hidden roadblocks, the stuff that you cannot see, trust me, it's the stuff that's hidden beyond your walls of self-awareness.
And I have done this with you. I highly recommend it. And what an awesome reward for people who have gotten all the way to the end of this interview with you. That's so generous. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Amazing. Well, thank you for having me. It's always a party when you and I get together. So
awesome.
Much fun.
We're going to do it again. Thanks, Susan.
Thanks, Meg. Thanks, everybody.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Anthropology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.